The Levite handed her over to the mob, who gang-raped her all night.
They knew her and abused her all the night until the morning, and when the day began to spring, they let her go. Then came the woman in the dawning of the day and fell down at the door of the man's house where her lord was, till it was light. Judges 19:25-6.
In the morning, the Levite found his concubine lying prostrate on the doorstep and said, with what we today might see as callous abruptness,
"Up and let us be going."
But she didn't move. She was dead. So he
took a knife and laid hold on his concubine and divided her, together with her bones, into 12 pieces and sent her into all the coasts of Israel.
Yes, you read correctly. Look it up in Judges 19:29. Let's charitably put it down again to the ubiquitous weirdness of the Bible. This story is so similar to that of Lot, one can't help wondering whether a fragment of manuscript became accidentally misplaced in some long-forgotten scriptorium, an illustration of the erratic provenance of sacred texts.
Lot's uncle Abraham was the founding father of all three great monotheistic religions. His patriarchal status renders him only somewhat less likely than God to be taken as a role model. But what modern moralist would wish to follow him? Relatively early in his long life, Abraham went to Egypt to tough out a famine with his wife Sarah. He realized that such a beautiful woman would be desirable to the Egyptians and that therefore his own life as her husband might be endangered. So he decided to pass her off as his sister. In this capacity, she was taken into Pharaoh's harem, and Abraham consequently became rich in Pharaoh's favor. God disapproved of this cozy arrangement and sent plagues on Pharaoh and his house. Why not on Abraham? An understandably aggrieved Pharaoh demanded to know why Abraham had not told him Sarah was his wife. He then handed her back to Abraham and kicked them both out of Egypt, Genesis 12:18-19. Weirdly, it seems that the couple later tried to pull the same stunt again, this time with Abimelech, the king of Gerar. He too was induced by Abraham to marry Sarah, again having been led to believe she was Abraham's sister, not his wife, Genesis 20:2-5. He too expressed his indignation in almost identical terms to Pharaoh's, and one can't help sympathizing with both of them. Is the similarity another indicator of textual unreliability? Such unpleasant episodes in Abraham's story are mere peccadilloes compared with the infamous tale of the sacrificing of his son Isaac. Muslim scripture tells the same story about Abraham's other son, Ishmael. God ordered Abraham to make a burnt offering of his longed-for son. Abraham built an altar, put firewood upon it, and trussed Isaac up on top of the wood. His murdering knife was already in his hand when an angel dramatically intervened with the news of a last-minute change of plan. God was only joking, after all, tempting Abraham and testing his faith. A modern moralist cannot help but wonder how a child could ever recover from such psychological trauma. By the standards of modern morality, this disgraceful story is an example simultaneously of child abuse, bullying in two asymmetrical power relationships, and the first recorded use of the Nuremberg defence, "I was only obeying orders." Yet the legend is one of the great foundational myths of all three monotheistic religions.
Once again, modern theologians will protest that the story of Abraham sacrificing Isaac should not be taken as literal fact. And once again, the appropriate response is twofold. First, many, many people, even to this day, do take the whole of their scripture to be literal fact, and they have a great deal of political power over the rest of us, especially in the United States and in the Islamic world. Second, if not as literal fact, how should we take the story? As an allegory? Then an allegory for what? Surely nothing praiseworthy. As a moral lesson?